Hey everyone, you're listening to the LFC Podcasting Couch, and this episode's brought to you by Pharmacy Mart, Fairfield, New South Wales. Now, if you mention this podcast to the team, you'll receive 20% off their entire vitamin and sports supplement range. That's Pharmacy Mart opposite the Fairfield train station. And if you want any more location details, head to pharmacymart.com.au. Now, let's get on with the show.
Lovely cushion header. Pacheco!
Hey everyone, welcome to episode 97 of the LFC Podcasting Couch. We're getting close to the big 100. It's coming up way too quickly for us. And so I thought, hey, let's do the shout out on Twitter, find out who's out there and who wants to talk about the Leicester win. First prize of the season, if we're a Manchester United fan, would be counting that one as one of the prizes for the year. So we have just beaten Leicester in the Premier League Asia Trophy. And so as a return potter, I will introduce first Mr. Anthony Stonelake. You there, my friend?
I am. Hello. Nice to be back.
Hello. Good to see you. Good to hear from you again. The youngest and strangely most mature person we've had on the pod ever. It's weird. But yeah, good to have you back, dude. I asked you if you had any of your crew from, what was it, Anfield? You were
introduced. The Anfield Talk, yeah.
The Anfield Talk, yeah. So you have your own podcast, your own website as well. Do you do anything else on there?
Oh, there's obviously the Twitter account as well. Should give us a follow, obviously. But yeah. I've brought along Arjun from our podcast and our website, and he's here with me.
Nice. Arjun, how you doing, man?
I'm good. I'm good, Nish. How are you?
Good, good, good. And you are from the same group? You won the leaders. Do you boss Anthony around? What's your role there?
Haha, no, he bosses me around, even though he's like 10 years younger than me.
There's a little bastard. Good to have you on. Fair enough. And we got another new guy on here, Steve Plunks. Steve, how are you, my friend?
I'm good, yeah. First time for me, quite right. So, yeah. It'd be interesting to see how it goes.
Yeah, man. Well, I've seen your Twitter handle following us from a very, very long time ago, at least 6 or 7 months minimum, I'd say. So, it's great,
yeah,
that, great that you absolutely put your hand up and actually said you want to be on the pod. So really appreciate it, man.
No worries. All good.
Yeah, cool. Well, we'll actually start with you since people have already heard Anthony and the Anfield Talk before. So, Steve, why don't you give us the same two questions I ask everyone. Who are you, as in where are you from and everything like that, and what got you into Liverpool? So far away, my friend.
Okay. Currently live on the Wirral, which is the wrong side of the Mersey from Liverpool. Originally from South Liverpool, been a Liverpool fan. This is my 41st year as a Liverpool fan. So technology and all that good stuff sees me making my first appearance on a podcast. So yeah, exciting for me to do this.
That's amazing, man. On the Wirral as well. So right in the heart. And you're on a podcast hosted by an Australian with an Englishman and what sounds like another Indian as well. So you're right. Yep. Technology all over the place.
A cosmopolitan podcast.
Tell me about it. For those who may have heard as well, my family's actually originally from Liverpool. Well, my dad's not. He moved there in 73. My brothers are born there. But I was born in Cambridge and grew up near Basingstoke and moved to this part of the world in 95. So I'm still technically English and technically woolen, I guess. Mm-hmm. I won't even go into it. So it's great to have Scousers actually on the pod. It does make a big difference. So we can hear your opinions because I'm sure you've been to a game or two in the flesh to Anfield over the last 41 years. Yeah. So I'll be hitting you up for a few atmospheric or some historical questions in a bit just about your experiences. But we'll talk about Arjun. Arjun, are you there, my friend? You still here? You haven't dropped out yet?
No. Hopefully y'all can hear me.
Yeah, you're all good, man. How about the same two questions to you? Who are you and what got you into Liverpool?
So I'm from Bangalore, India. And I followed football really late in my life. I mean, compared to what Europeans and Australians are usually used to. I started following football only at the age of 9. At 2003, I became a Liverpool fan watching my favorite player, Steven Gerrard, play. He was just all over the pitch, and he was so young at that age. And I think he was the most complete midfielder from 2003 to about 2009, 2010. Just fell in love with it. And, actually started liking Liverpool then. I fell in love because of the 2005 Champions League final. I mean, that was something spectacular, and that was the most vivid memory, the earliest vivid memory I have of following Liverpool and falling in love with the club.
It's a good history, mate. It's a lot of people came on around that same sort of time, so you certainly picked a good time, 2003, to just get used to the club, and then 2005, Istanbul. Ah, the memories.
It was a perfect night.
It was pretty amazing. Anthony, just in case people haven't heard you before, even though you're on kind of recently with Rich, do you want to just give us just a two-minute, well, 1 minute. Actually, no, I'm giving you 30 seconds. Screw you. who are you? Why do you follow Liverpool?
Well, I'm Welsh, and I regularly try and get up to Anfield as much as I can. I went to my first Liverpool game in 2003. We lost 2-1 to Chelsea. And I know that I'm pretty young, so that makes me about 3-4 years old when I went, but that's not the point I'm trying to make. I love the club because it runs in my family, really. It's my dad, my dad's dad, and it goes on for a good 60, 70 years, and it's just my blood.
It's awesome, man. It's good to have you back on. You're bloody passionate for a kid your age as well. I mean, soon you're going to go through puberty, and that's going to be a big one. So just get used to that. Things are going to start going downhill from there. Nah, it's awesome, man. Really appreciate having you back. I'm going to go straight over firstly to Steve, being the local scouser. Let's talk about Leicester for a starter. You watched the game, I'm assuming. Do you want to give us your overall thoughts on the game, just how you felt it went and what you think was lacking, what you think was doing well?
Yeah, it must have been quite right. Still got to bear in mind this is a pre-season friendly and many substitutions which affected the flow of the game. The game, particularly in the first half, had quite a lot of intensity. It was very similar to a Premier League game, so that was a good test for the guys who came in. The game itself, we didn't start particularly well, as we know, the goal from Salami at the back post, the free header, getting above Milner. We came back into the game, we grew into the game, we determined very quickly that the left side with Fuchs and Maguire, and you have to be careful how you say Fuchs, don't you, so got that one right, were their weakness, and we doubled up over there with Salah and the other guys getting involved down their left-hand side. We've got a lot of joy down there throughout the whole game, and I would say that was sort of confirmed by the fact that when Ryan Kent came on, that's the side he went to, and he showed a couple of nice glimpses, beating a few players on the right-hand side. So we grew into the game, is how I see it. The changes didn't help us. It would have been nice to see some of the more seasoned players get a bit of a longer run. And I only think it finished 2-1 because of the changes. I thought there was more there for us. I thought we could have scored further goals, but it disrupted our pattern by making all of those changes.
Yeah, good summary. It's can you give us your top two players of the game, the two that impressed you the most?
Yeah, obviously you've got to go for Coutinho in a deeper role against a side that didn't really pressurise him. He pulled all of the strings. And given he's only been at the club a couple of weeks, I thought Salah showed up well. He showed for the ball. He came inside with energy. He used his pace. He linked in well. The little give and go for his goal and the braveness to put the head on the ball in the box with the keeper coming at him. Bodes well for Salah at Liverpool. I think we've had a glimpse of what's to come.
Yeah, had Peter Kafinas, the coach, on the couch in the last episode. We watched the game together, and just all the time we're going, he looks like a guy who's played for us for many seasons, at least two seasons already, just gelling in so easily already. So good signs. And we've still got Mane to come, which is all kinds of scary for the opposition. So.
Isn't it just?
I'm bloody excited. Arjun, how about the same for you? High level, what do you think?
I think it was just a great game of football from both teams. And we really, I was surprised with Klopp's selection because against Wigan, he did the Gini, Lallana, Coutinho midfield three, and we got overrun in midfield against Wigan. So I was surprised he went with that against Leicester as well. And immediately you saw Leicester just completely bypassed our midfield, just played long balls to Vardy and Slimani and tried to have them hold up the ball. And they scored from one of those counterattacks. So I was a little surprised, and we saw a lot more control once Henderson came on in the second half. For me, the biggest takeaway from preseason has been Daniel Sturridge. he looks like a man who is 100% fit. He's beating players for pace. He's beating players with just pure skill, and he's getting his shots, and he looks confident. The only thing really missing from his game so far is goals. But you know Danny Sturridge, that'll come in a blink of an eye.
Yeah, good shout. Was he one of your top players from the game as well, this one? Or were you just saying from preseason as a whole?
Yeah, for me, Coutinho, number one, obviously. I mean, some people are saying he's playing for a move to Barca. Some people are saying he's playing well because he's comfortable knowing that his future lies at Liverpool. Whatever it is, he's been absolutely incredible. He's worth every bit of that 200 million that Barca are supposed to give us for him. And my second best player for me has been Simon Mignolet. He has clearly shown that he is Liverpool's number one. That was something that was in doubt, especially after retaining Danny Ward. And Klopp says, you know, it's a three-way battle. For me, Mignolet is the clear-cut number one. And as much as Karius may improve, as much as Danny Ward may improve, or even go out on loan, it's Mignolet's gloves to lose.
Yeah, fair shout. Over to you, Anthony.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the game personally. I thought it was a great way to continue with preseason. You saw most of the tendencies the teams tend to show in preseason, with some slow play here and there, but that's to be expected as players get back up to speed and try and obviously get to the speed that the Premier League is at these days. And I really, really am loving how Salah and Coutinho are playing together. They showed it a few times against Leicester, that their little interchanging play, especially to get both goals, I think it's shown that it doesn't matter where you come from, you can still manage to integrate into a team very quickly. And it is surprising that I've seen that happen so quickly with Salah, because it has taken other players ages and ages to do that in the past. But it's nice to see. And obviously with Mane coming back in, it was going to be such a quick and fluid attack that we're going to have next season. It's going to be very dangerous in the Premier League, and I'm just looking forward to it. In regards to my top two players, I'm going to cheat a little bit, and I'm going to put Salah and Coutinho as one, because I think with either of them being taken out of there, the other wouldn't have had such a big impact. Especially for the first goal with Salah passing it to Coutinho and then the little cross into the box. That was just amazing football. And then in second, I'm going to see Daniel Sturridge, because it's so nice to see him back playing fit football. If he can reach the levels that he was at in the 2013-14 season, he's going to be so dangerous.
Yeah, definitely. That comment you made about the players coming in, taking time to integrate, I'm just thinking back now at Klopp's purchases so far. I was thinking Wijnaldum, Mane, Matip, Karius is maybe the only question mark. Klavan was always going to be a squad player. And Manninger, who is a teacher / cheerleader or whatever the hell he was brought in for. But hey, Mignolet improved, so I guess he did something well. He passed on some knowledge or something or the other. But Salah coming in and the thoughts of and Andy Robertson coming in, the thoughts of having Keita and Virgil van Dijk coming in, you could imagine nearly all of those players slotting straight in. The only question mark, I guess, would be Keita, strangely enough, because he's from a different league and he's never played in Premier League. But then we see Matip slotted in. So who knows? I think that's really what Klopp's going for. That's the quality we need, people who won't take a season or two to get ready for the Premier League challenge. So good, very, very good point. I'm going to go back to our friend Steet over that side. What are the thoughts locally in Liverpool, speaking to your mates in the pub or whatever? What are your thoughts about the season ahead from the Scousers?
Very optimistic. Not going as far as saying this is our year, because we get tripped up with that one every year at the moment, don't we?
Never heard that
before.
So
some of the signings are promising. But yeah, it's a common theme between the Reds and the Blues that Liverpool fans are accused of saying this is our year every year. So we're being very careful not to say that. Very optimistic. Very, very keen to see what happens with regards to the two signings you mentioned, the Van Dijk and the Keita transfers. Question is, where does Keita fit in? Keita fit in on it? Does he play in a slightly more advanced role? Does he play as a number six? Because clearly he's using two centre midfielders on the half turn in Gini and in Lallana. I would assume it'll be alongside one of those two, and they'll rotate those three because they're going to get an awful lot of games. So it's very optimistic on Merseyside at the moment. We absolutely adore the manager and what he's doing. He absolutely is the right man for the club, and there is zero negativity towards the things that Klopp does on Merseyside at the moment. He's we just love him. We're just hoping he can deliver what we all want.
That's bloody good. I can tell you in Australia, the feeling's the same. So, not that anyone really cares too much, but us Aussies on the other side of the world, man, we're bouncing at our 2 a.m. kickoffs. We're very much behind what happens over there. So, it's good to hear that it's not, you know, when you're on Twitter all the time, you get a little bit, you know, a bit frustrated at comments that come out. And it's good to hear that the locals are actually pretty positive about what's going to happen this year. So, makes me feel a bit better about life.
me too.
Nice one. Arjun, what's the feeling like in India? Are you part of the local OLSC or anything like that? Do you connect with other Indian LFC fans?
Yeah, I'm part of the Bangalore OLSC group. And it's a little apprehensive because some of them are concerned that we've not made the signings that we want to. And some of them are concerned that we don't have backups, because even when you hear that the Keita deal is dead and the Van Dijk deal is dead, you're not hearing alternatives to these players. So little concern from that end. But I keep telling people, you don't understand the transcendent talent that Naby Keita is. I watched Leipzig play last season and he was on another level. And he was on another level against Bayern Munich. And that is saying something, because against Thiago, against Xabi Alonso, It's absolute joy to watch him play. And just to answer Stay's point, he's actually a number 8. We've said this about a lot of players before, but he is like Gerrard. He can defend, he can attack, he's got the creativity, and he can take set pieces. So he's definitely that transcendent talent, and I don't mind us going out and spending that 80 million on him. But the overall mood is still a little apprehensive for now, but you can feel the positivity building up, especially after the after Klopp came in. It's been all about positivity, and it's about knowing that our club is in good hands as opposed to what it was since Rafa left us.
Yeah, fair shout. Anthony, you're pretty close to Liverpool being Wales anyway, so I won't ask what people in Wales are thinking, because I assume it's along the same sort of lines. But in your particular situation, do you think, I'm going to throw this one at you, if we did not get Naby Keita or Virgil van Dijk, how do you think we'll go this coming season?
Well, that's a tough question, but I feel like it depends on whether or not Chan and Coutinho stay. If both of them stay, I don't see losing out on Naby Keita being a big issue. Obviously, it would be lovely to get a world-class player into the squad, but the main detriment to the squad would be losing out on Virgil van Dijk, because we've needed a top-class defender for years and years. It's been, I'm not sure in my lifetime I've seen Liverpool have a solid defence that is going to win us games by not conceding goals, because you've seen it even when we've come close to winning the league. Our problem has been that we've leaked goals against sides. I went to the game when we beat Cardiff 6-3 in the Cardiff City Stadium, and we still managed to concede 3 to Cardiff City, who got relegated that season, and we were saved by a Suarez hat-trick. I'm of the opinion that defence wins championships, and I just hope that going into next season, if we don't sign Van Dijk, we sign somebody else. I know it came out recently that there's a chance that we don't sign another centre-back if we lose out on Van Dijk. But I really want us to bring in at least another centre-half.
Yeah, makes sense. I mean, going back all the way in the history books, you think back of, despite him being an absolutely god-awful commentator, but Mark Lawrenson was bought for a record fee of £900,000 in 1981. And this is more Steve's probably situation. Were you obviously avidly following the club back then, but do you remember vividly Mark joining the club and forming up with Alan Hansen and Phil Thompson? Is that
I
fresh?
Do, absolutely, yeah.
Do you want to talk fresh, about that moment where we splashed all that money for a centre-back and what that meant to the club?
Yeah, it was an eye-opener. It raised a few eyebrows on Merseyside, but we'd all seen what he was capable of over the previous months and weeks. A quick guy, complimented Hansen very well. I don't know if any of you have read Alan Hansen's autobiography, where he makes reference to the ones that he missed, Lawrenson didn't. So it was an absolutely brilliant combination. Lawrenson was very quick, and the £900 was forgotten. £900,000, sorry, was forgotten within a matter of weeks and games, because anything that Hansen didn't mop up, Lawrenson certainly did. And then they switched it round a little bit, where Hansen read the game, Lawrenson went and won the first ball, and it was just fantastic. And I completely agree with what the guy said a second ago. The centre defensive recruitment is far more important than the centre midfield recruitment. We don't have somebody who can play alongside Matip who can complement what he does. Even at times yesterday, Lovren went to sleep, and that is a concern. So the Van Dijk thing, if it cost the club £85 million for that player, it's a relative Mark Lawrenson, if you like. It's going to raise eyebrows because of the fee, but I believe in the long term, what that guy brings to the club, what that guy brings to the game, each individual game, is priceless. We could win be in the Champions League 3 years in a row, and he's paid for himself. So it's a must. It's an absolute must for the club to do that.
Yeah, definitely. And I don't want to bring up, that other team from Manchester, but we all remember what Rio Ferdinand came for. It was like £30 million back in, was it 2001, 2002? Obviously, yeah. Huge eyebrows. I mean, he just came to Leeds and all that kind of stuff. So that was completely forgotten, that fee, when he just went in and basically dominated his position, held his position, and won title after title. So that, if that's what we need, when was the last time we actually spent big on a centre back? Admittedly, it was Lovren, but Lovren, you know, even though he's from Southampton, I think we can all trust Klopp's opinion a little bit better this time around. And I still think Lovren's got a lot to offer. I'm not going to write him off completely, but he's got that tendency to want to be a leader. And I think we said on a previous pod, Lovren's the best when he doesn't try and be a leader. He just stays back and does his job right. And then you can let someone else do some crazy flying in for a huge header somewhere. But that's, I'm assuming Arjun.
The thing is.
Yeah, sorry, you go.
The thing is with Lovren, he's a first ball winner. He's a first phase ball winner. He's not your guy who's going to pick up your second ball in bits and pieces, because he doesn't see the danger, which is why I said he switches off from time to time. So what you need, if you're going to play Lovren, is you need a central defender that's going to allow him to go and attack the ball. In particular, when we had three at the back, he'd often dive in the left back channel. He'd go across to the left hand side to try and cover the danger. True. And the amount of times against West Ham and teams like that he missed out on winning the ball, we conceded from it. So it's really, really important for Liverpool, because over the years, Skrtel, Carragher, Lovren, those guys were all phase one ball winners. And at times we played two phase one ball winners alongside each other. And when one goes to win the ball, the other one just does not see the second and third man running, and we're getting punished for it. So Matip is a very intelligent footballer, I believe. Allowing Van Dijk to attack the ball, with Matip reading the game in behind him, gives us a similar partnership to when John Terry did that role for Chelsea. Again, I don't like to talk about our opposition, but you have to give credit where it's due.
Yep.
That guy's a fantastic reader of a game of football, and that's what we've been crying out for. Matip and Van Dijk together, I think you get the partnership equal to sort of a Cahill-Terry role, where one does one job and one does the other.
Definitely. One thing just on Terry before I move across to Arjun again. What people miss, the amount of times when I watched Chelsea play and John Terry was on the goal line or making some last-ditch save to stop the ball from going over the line, whatever it was, he was sweeping up from the goalkeeper. And that's what a proper, intelligent, well-positioned centre-back can do. I can't remember the last time anything like that happened for us. I think Milner did a header off the line. Oh, Carragher, of course.
Carragher. How many own goals did Carragher score attacking the ball? And you always want your centre-halves to attack the ball, particularly in dangerous areas. The difference between Carragher and Terry is, Terry didn't register so many own goals, but that's because he played with better defenders around him as well. Yeah. So Carragher was the last of the defenders that tried to read the game, particularly late on in his career when pace really wasn't something he offered. But you're right, we haven't had that for a long time, and we're crying out for it.
Yeah, definitely. Arjun, I'm going to go to you about the youngsters. So the kids are all right. They've been performing well. They've been getting a lot of game time. I'll quickly run through some names. Brian Kent, Woodburn. We haven't seen, sadly, any Wilson, because I think he must be injured. That's why he didn't come. Solanke's just joined. Gomez at the back. Flanagan, Trent Alexander-Arnold. Which are the ones who have stood up for you the most, and who do you think is going to be the one that maybe it has maybe one or two? Because I think I know who you're going to say one is, but the one or two is going to really have a more solid shot at the first team action this year.
Well, for me, number one, and he has been for the last 2 or 3 years, has been Ryan Kent. Now, I've been following the under-23s, under-21s before for the last 3 or 4 years. And really, the three players that stood out were Cameron Brannigan, Trent Alexander-Arnold, and Ryan Kent. And, you know, he's the kind of guy who gets you off your seat, you know. You watch, you see him get the ball, and he's going at a defender, and you just want to get off your seat to see what he does next. And he showed glimpses of that. So he's definitely one to look out for. For me, I think Dom Solanke may have just put himself ahead of Origi in the pecking order. Now, very, very random thought, but the game against Crystal Palace, Coutinho got the ball on the left wing and he cut in. This was the shot where everyone was egging him on to shoot and he just shot over. Origi stood absolutely still. He didn't move. But Solanke made a great cut. And if Coutinho hadn't shot, Coutinho could have played a negative pass. And that could have gone straight to Solanke, and Solanke was one-on-one. These are the kind of tiny things that Solanke did, from what I've seen, that Origi hasn't been doing for the last two seasons. And I've always given Origi a long rope because of his age and because of his lack of regular playing time. But from what I've seen so far, I think Klopp is seen now that Origi is indispensable. Origi is dispensable, and Solanke could just as well slot into his role.
Okay, fair enough. So you picked... Back to the question was around who would you see as getting more of a shot. Do you think it's going to be Solanke and Ryan Kent, or who else? Are those the two that you picked who impressed you the most? Who you think going to get a better shot than the first team?
Yeah. Cool. I mean, yeah, that's who I picked. But, I mean, obviously, Kent may go out on loan because that's what we hear the most. But if you want me to pick realistically, I mean, I'm looking at something 3 years, 4 years down the line.
Yeah, true.
As to who will have the biggest impact.
Yeah.
But if you want immediately this season, I think Woodburn and Trent Alexander-Arnold are the two players that will get the most. Actually, Woodburn is an interesting case. He plays as a striker for the under-23s. And then last season, he was played predominantly on the left wing. Yeah. And now Klopp has found that Lallana role for him, you know, at around number 8
drifting.
Or number 10, where he's just in midfield, just sitting in front of the holding midfielder. Yeah. And he's done pretty well. He can pick a pass. That's very surprising. I haven't seen that before from him. He can pick a pass.
Yeah. Like saying everything that I've been saying, it's really weird. I'm like, where did his passing range come from? It just came out of nowhere.
Yeah, I don't know. I've not seen that before. I mean, maybe he hasn't had the opportunity to display that he has that passing ability, but it's something I haven't seen before, and it's wonderful to watch.
Yeah,
I hope he's learning from Coutinho.
Yeah, for sure. Anthony, over there, I'm going to go to you and say, with our current crop of players, so forget any players about to join, and now that we have got, actually, forget about defense, let's just go for your front six. What do you think, with our current crop of players, the strongest front six is?
Oof, that's a really tough question. I think that the front three will be Salah, Mane and Firmino, with Coutinho dropping into the midfield and it being Coutinho, Henderson and one other. Whether that one other is Lallana or Wijnaldum, I think they could be very interchangeable throughout the season. I don't see Chan fitting in there because, to be honest, I really don't want to see Chan and Henderson play together because when it happened last season, it was just a shambles. And they play too similar a role. They both play the number six, and if we get two number sixes in there, they're just going to clash with each other and it's going to be a detriment to the midfield as a whole. Whether or not Chan and Henderson will play on a sort of rotation, that's to be seen, but I can't see it really happening because Henderson is the captain, and I feel like if Henderson's fit, he's got to be in the squad. I personally adore Henderson for the player that he is, and you've seen it in pre-season that his passing range is exceptional, especially coming off this injury. It's so impressive to see him be out for, what is it, 4 or 5 months, and then come back straight into the squad and be able to ping balls 40, 50 yards. I feel like Henderson has to start in the squad. And going forward then, Coutinho, he's probably undroppable from the squad because of his name alone, even if he is playing bad football. But the chances are he won't be, because he has got the caliber of that Barcelona are coming knocking for him. And if we don't play him next season, it's going to be a bit stupid of a decision from Klopp. As I said, the other position is going to be Wijnaldum or Lallana in the front three. I think picks itself. There's obviously the argument for Daniel Sturridge to come in for Roberto Firmino, but I think Klopp likes Firmino too much.
Isn't it funny thinking that if Keita does come in and he becomes undroppable, A, maybe because we know he's quality, but B, because of his price tag as well, that means it'll be a Coutinho, Keita, Henderson midfield, which means that Wijnaldum, Lallana, Emre Can, and who else? Someone else. They can't make it even onto the pitch. You know, we got so much quality on the bench in the midfield, it's absolutely nuts. So I think we should get rid of 2 or 3
defenders. But I was just going to say, all our players have a sort of injury history with them. So we really need this. Every single one of our players has missed a lengthy amount of time in their careers. Whether it's been, I think Wijnaldum's the only one who hasn't missed a lengthy period in his career. But Lallana, Henderson, Coutinho, Firmino, Sturridge, Salah, Mane, they've all missed lengthy periods. So we definitely do need that depth. And I don't think we'll have this issue of, oh, our best players are not playing, because it's something that every big club has. They all have the depth. They all have the quality to keep up with Champions League and League Cups and the Premier League.
Yeah, for sure. Back to you, Steve. I'm going to throw one at you again, completely out of the blue. Sorry, I haven't given you any time to prepare.
That's all right.
Can I make an assumption that you wouldn't mind if we went after a top-class striker from somewhere in the world to add to our squad?
Yes, but primarily as a plan B, and that sounds bizarre, saying sign a striker as a plan B. Klopp makes it very, very clear that Firmino is the catalyst for first the press and second the counter-press. This is the concern over Daniel Sturridge. Whilst Daniel Sturridge has got all the ability in the world, and if you cast your mind back to the final versus Sevilla, he'd be the only player on the pitch who could score a goal like that, with no back lift on the outside of the left foot.
Beautiful.
The thing with Sturridge is, the question is, does he want to do the work that Firmino does? And most of the fans would say no, he doesn't. What he does give you is danger. He's much more dangerous. So if we signed let's say we went for Aubameyang, for instance, and we found £70 million to sign that guy. What Dortmund do, they still do what they did under Klopp, which is the transition from back to front very quick, and he's the leader of that, using his pace into the channels. A bit sort of an upgrade on Lukaku in terms of his runs. If we bought a top-class centre-forward, it would upset what Klopp's tried to do in terms of getting that ball back, pressurising teams into releasing the ball in areas they don't want to, and therefore giving us the opportunity to win the ball back. So I think, I don't think that's particularly high on his radar at the moment. The two guys we've spoken about, centre midfielder and the centre back, those are the two positions that he's really looking to fill. I don't see Liverpool signing a top class striker, and it wouldn't worry me if they didn't.
Yeah, perfectly fine. Hey, it sounds like someone's typing or something in the background. Can you just make sure you either mute yourself or just don't type?
I'm completely on my own, it's not me.
Someone else is typing.
It's all using my phone, so there's no typing.
Oh, well, I just heard knock, knock, knock. Maybe it's someone's microphone is hitting against their chest. Anyway, don't worry about it. It's all good. I'm going to ask you again, Steve, because you've been quiet a lot. So I'm going to ask you, what are your thoughts on Andy Robertson?
I made a point of watching this player when we got linked with him. I always do. When we were linked with Oxlade-Chamberlain, I watched Arsenal games to pick up on that. There's a lot of work to do with him. He's certainly not a shoo-in for a first-team position. Defensively, my concern is, and in particular if you take when Palace routed Hull at Palace towards the end of the season in a must-win game for Hull, his positional sense was a concern. He was often caught on the wrong side of the ball. His recovery wasn't great. But he's playing in a side that had a habit of losing. He's also playing with players alongside him that are not of the ability of some of the guys that we've got. So hopefully some coaching with regards to our system, because that's what makes it work. It's the system that makes teams what they are. He can establish himself, learn from Klopp and from the coaching staff. And from the likes of Milner, James Milner would have a lot to offer in terms of teaching that guy, because that's the model pro, and that's basically what we've got to make this young lad become. At 23, he's got time to grow. Not for me, assuming for the first team straight away. It's a development, it's a work in progress very much with him.
Yeah, fair enough. Breaking my heart a little bit because I'm a huge Andy Robertson fan.
sorry, I'm just calling what I see. Sorry.
Well, it's great having you on the pod,
just,
mate.
Just a quick point, Nish.
I'm kidding. Yeah, go
just
for
a
it.
Quick point. We've never won a trophy without a Scotsman in the team. Since Andy Robertson comes in, next day we win a trophy. Just saying.
Right. 77 or 76 was the last time Liverpool won a major trophy without a Scotsman. I just happened to have heard that randomly. I can't remember how that was, but yeah, anyway, that was the time.
We signed Kenny in 77, didn't we? So
there you go. So it must be 76. Yeah, 76.
Yeah.
Incredible. I'm going to go to you, Arjun. I'm going to talk about the back line now. We have got a lot of options. We've got Milner. We now got Robertson. We've got Lovren. We've got Klavan, who I thought had a really good game. No one's really talked about it. We then have Matip. We also have Klein, Trent Alexander-Arnold on the right, and even Flanagan. And we have three goalkeepers. What do you think is the current strongest defensive setup?
Well, as much as I loathe to say it, I think Lovren and Matip are our centre-back pairing. I'm completely anti-Lovren. I mean, I just don't see what he offers. He's like a mixed bag of Skrtel's lack of awareness and Kolo Touré's just general clumsiness. But he's better than Klavan. He's more experienced than Gomez, so he should get in. Left back, I will still stick with Milner. Again, experience, big club. Milner just has that nose that a player needs to have. He can play anywhere, so that's just what puts him ahead. Mignolet, I've said it before, Mignolet is our number one, clear-cut number one. And I'm going to go with Trent Arnold on the right. It's a little strange, but I don't think Klein offers what Trent does going forward. And defensively, Trent is solid. He tracks back. He has the desire to track back. He has the will to track back. And he's always been a sort of defensive-minded player. Even when in his younger days, he used to play as a holding midfielder. So he's got that defensive mindset already. It's just about going forward. And I think he provides much better crosses than Klein ever did. I think he created like 5 chances in the 4 preseason games so far, which is, I think, more than what Klein created in the first half of last season. So that says a lot.
How good is his low crosses as well? Just his powered cross across the floor. Incredible.
Absolutely incredible. And I think bar a couple of blocks from Scott Dan, I think Sturridge would have had like 2 goals thanks to those crosses alone. So
yeah. Trent did make... Oh, no, it wasn't Trent. It was Matip's back pass. But then Trent also did a bad back pass to Karius. Really, I think Karius was very unfairly judged this morning. I watched the game. Not this morning, last night, sorry. Very unfairly judged, in my opinion. The only wobbly times that he got were from crappy back passes. So I was like, come on, guys.
Exactly. It was Matip's and Klavan's fault.
Yeah, so...
And I saw people slaughtering carriers.
Yeah, it's a bit unfair. I'd like to see him, you know, with a bit more, you know, when the defence is actually a bit more in season, so they're a bit more settled. But anyway, it's all good. I'm going to go to you, our friend, Mr. Anthony. When it comes to the goal scorers this year, firstly... First, second, third in who scores the most goals, and who do you think's going, or what are those numbers going to be?
Well, I feel like it's going to be our top three, our front three that are going to be playing throughout the season. They're going to score the most goals. I think that's how it should be. I think Coutinho will take a step back from being the one that's scoring the goals also this season. I think that he's going to be more of a creative force in making the goals rather than finishing the goals, and playing a bit deeper also. Allows Coutinho to get a bit of his long-range antics
Anthony with a bit of a Michael Owen moment there.
Sorry.
That's a bit of a Michael Owen moment. Whoever plays the most scores the most goals, really.
Right. No, that is not what I mean. It's not that the whoever's playing the most. I feel like it's going to be down to Coutinho to create the goals rather than score the goals, and therefore the players down the wings are going to score more than Firmino in the middle. Firmino's going to be more there for the press and then the second press that we've talked about already. And Mane and Salah, they're going to be able to cut in and they're going to be able to score the goals that Coutinho is going to provide. It's going to be down to Henderson as well. I feel like our goals are going to more be... we're going to rely on the midfield more to create the goals rather than the attackers to finish the goals, because we already know how good a finisher each one of our front three is already.
Yeah, I think we're going to have a record number of tap-ins this year. I think there are going to be lots of shots from the outside or lots of shots across the goal, and Salah, Mane, and Firmino, one of them is going to pop up and just tap the ball into the back of the net, and it's going to be beautiful. Just do it, rinse and repeat all game long over and over again. But who's going to be number one, number two, and number three, and how many goals are they going to score each? That's still you, Anthony. That was my original question.
I think it's going to be pretty even. I think it's going to be 15-16 for all three of them. I think that it's probably going to be Mane as number one, Salah as number two, and then Firmino as number three. As much as I hate to say that Firmino is going to score the least amount of goals, because I bloody love him, but that's not the point. I feel like it's going to be... more responsible for the other two to score the goals, and it's going to be spread across the team a lot more this season than it has been previously. And I'm hoping that Henderson scores more than just one goal this season as well.
Yeah, pretty sure he will. I think he looks like... I don't know if anyone saw the article that they did, the interview with Henderson, where he said his foot is no longer giving him any problem anymore. He doesn't need to manage it anymore.
That's good news.
Yeah, he's feeling very strong about it. So let's pray that continues, because it'll be a total season changer. If anyone questions Henderson, just go back to 13-14 when he got the red card. Anyway, happy thoughts. Happy thoughts. Steve, I'm going to go to you and talk about... this is going to be the last question for all three of you, actually, because it's always a fun one. I want you to give me Liverpool's final ending predictions on Premier League, League Cup, FA Cup, and Champions League.
Okay, so we'll start with the League Cup, the less prestigious. We'll have a run in the League Cup. I think it will use some of the younger lads. They'll get games, and some of the players who aren't seeing too much game time. So maybe quarterfinals, because it's not going to be our focus. FA Cup, we're due an FA Cup, so I would imagine you'll go flat out for that. Semi-finals, at least, I would say. I really do think that's something we should prioritise. Champions League, a lot of teams are going to find us very difficult to play against because they're not used to playing against us. With Firmino playing proper false nine, with two diagonal runners from the left and the right, we're going to cause a lot of trouble for the opposition. More so away from home than at home, I would suspect, where teams will come out and play against us. So Champions League, minimum requirement should be quarterfinals. We definitely have the capability of doing that. And in the Premier League, if we get Van Dijk, anyone who finishes above Liverpool will win the league for me, because of how potent we are going forward. And if we get Van Dijk, that shuts the door for a lot of the goals we concede, purely because those two centre-halves will be as good a pairing as anybody's got. And I think we're going to have a strong, positive season. I think we'll challenge on three fronts. I don't think we'll place too much importance on the League Cup. But very positive about the whole thing, particularly if we centre half.
Awesome. Good to hear. Arjun?
I think League Cup will win it. That would be the first official trophy on the club. FA Cup, I think he's going to sacrifice the FA Cup because... I think we'll have a good run in the Champions League and we'll be in the running for the Premier League. So I think he's sacrificed the FA Cup. Champions League, I'm not going to tell you where we're going to finish, but I'm going to say this. We'll be the English team that goes the furthest in the competition. Whether that's quarterfinals, last 16, semifinals, or the finals, we'll be the English team that goes the furthest. And Premier League, we're the champions, baby.
Awesome. Love to hear it.
Love it.
I like it. Anthony.
I disagree with Arjun. I think that Klopp's going to sacrifice the League Cup over the FA Cup because the FA Cup doesn't play midweek, and there's going to be less of a nuisance to the squad to play on a Saturday rather than on a Wednesday and then the Saturday as well. I feel like if he sacrifices the League Cup, say, in October, it leaves the squad free for the Christmas period, and we don't have to worry about progressing in a cup competition, and then come the third round of the FA Cup in January, they can just play the youngsters like Woodburn and Ryan Kent, if he stays as well, give them a chance to shine. Obviously, it depends on who we draw, because we could end up playing against a Chelsea or a Manchester City or even a United, and that would make it a very difficult task. But obviously, I'd like to see us go for the FA Cup, because we haven't won the FA Cup since 2006, if my memory serves me correctly. Also, the Premier League, my heart says that we'll win it. My head tells me that it's going to be second or third place. Champions League, I agree with Arjun. I think we're going to be the longest staying English team in the competition. I can't see anybody else really doing anything in the competition, to be honest. And I feel like that's where we belong, and it's like a second home for us.
Yeah, I think we're all pretty much agreed then in that case that next year is our year. So I've been saying it for about 35 years, but next year is definitely our year. But no, in seriousness, it's I'm in the same boat. I think what you said, Steve, really hits on the head. If someone beats us, whoever beats us is going to be champions. And that one team that beats us, shouldn't say that every team that beats us. But yeah, that one team that beats us will be champions. I think we're going to be really pushing all the way through to the end. Whatever Klopp was able to do with three new starters and getting rid of 14 players and not spending any money and still able to make us jump four places, I think he's got some madness planned for this season ahead. So we'll see what happens there. My League Cup prediction was runner-up, primarily because Klopp likes to beat good teams. And so in the League Cup, since it's all Premier League teams, pretty much he'll put a good team out for that. For FA Cup, depends on who we face, but if we're facing League One, League Two, or Championship, he's most likely to play kids and therefore most likely to get kicked out earlier. And Champions League, I'm saying a minimum of quarterfinals. I don't think we will get out before the quarterfinals. I think we're just too good against good teams. So yeah, as you guys said all before, we are too. We're going to do well. We'll see what happens. And if we get these next two players, I think we'll make a huge statement. Hopefully unify the fan base with the whole FSG, you know, debacle and things that people always talk about. It will be very nice to have one unified fan base until we find something new to whinge about. So we'll see what happens there. But I'll start with you, Steve. Do you have any final shout-outs, people you want to say, or people you hope are going to convince to actually listen to this podcast, someone that you want to call out to?
I'm just going to say thank you guys for having me. This is the first one I've done, so hopefully all went okay from my perspective. I'll be very proactive. If I get the opportunity to retweet this, I'll do it. And it's all good. More people should do things like this. It's really good to listen to the other two guys on here as well, listen to their thoughts. Doesn't matter where we are in the world, we share the same views, and obviously we all have one common goal, which is making sure that this is a positive season. So, yeah, it's good for me, and I'll be very proactive given the chance about these things.
I really appreciate it, man. And it's great to have another local. And Maddie Lyon, who comes on the pod, he's a local as well. So maybe we'll get you and Maddie and maybe Rich Northants, who's my UK guy, to do a pod, because we need more locals on here. So really appreciate you putting your hand up and coming on board.
Enjoyed it. Thanks.
Nice one. Arjun, any shout outs for your side of the world?
Just all the Indian followers, LFC Podcasting Coach. I don't know how many there are really, but thanks for listening, and it's always been a pleasure, always been an honor for any podcast.
Really love your opinions, man. That's good.
Thank you for having me.
That's cool, pleasure. Anthony, over to you.
The first thing I'm going to say is, where's my shout out, Arjun? Where is it? But
rude.
You get all the shout outs in my audience.
But in all honesty, it's just a big thanks to you, Nish. It's lovely to be back on, even if I did have a bit of a brain fart halfway through. You really did blindside me, but that's not the point. It just keeps it fresh. So thank you very much, Nish, for having me on again. I hope to be on a bit more regularly. I think it's been, 5 months since I was on a podcast with you. That's a long time. But other shout-outs go out to Ross and Em, two of the most important people in my life, and hopefully they'll have a listen to this as well. But obviously, thanks, Nish.
Nice one, guys. And thanks, everyone, to all the listeners out there listening. I mean, it's absolutely mental thinking I'm coming up to 100 followers. I'm now cracking about 10. It took me 8 months to get 10,000 listens. It took me 2 months to get 20,000 listens. It took me 3 weeks to get 30,000 listens. And now I'm getting about 1,000 listens every episode. So every 10 episodes I do, I get, 10,000 listens, which is just mental for a little amateur pod about Liverpool hosted in Australia. Try work that one out. So just really appreciate all you guys. And yeah, all three of you coming on, Steve, Arjun, Anthony, just really appreciate having you guys on and being part of the little couch party.
Right. Anytime. I really enjoyed myself, so thanks.
Nice one, guys. All right, have
hope
a good...
to see you all again sometime.
Yeah, definitely.
Can I just say before we go, fine, that if you're listening to this on the Anfield Talks channel, make sure you give Nish a follow at Podcasting Couch on Twitter, and make sure you just regularly listen to his podcast.
Yeah, and I'll be putting out, when I send this out, everyone's at mentions and stuff, so make sure you give everyone a follow. That'll be very appreciated, and go listen to the Anfield Talk. And everyone have a very good day or night, and goodbye. See ya. Lovely cushion header. Pajero!